It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. To wear or not wear a mask? That is the question during this pandemic. This hour, we want to take a look at the psychology and sociology of donning a face mask. We want to reach out to you. Do you wear a mask in public when you go shopping, in the park, in the downtown, anywhere outside of your house? What do you think of people who do or people who don't? We want to hear from you this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Your questions, your stories, sad, happy, bizarre stories of interactions you've had or seen with mask-wearing people in your midst. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Coming up a little bit later, we'll look at how race factors into our mask wearing. But first of all, let's check in with Allison Phillips. She is Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Healthy Habits Lab at Iowa State University. Allison, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Let's talk, let's talk about masks apart from this coronavirus mask wearing. What does wearing a mask or seeing others in masks do to us psychologically?
Well, if you're a person not wearing a mask or if you're a person wearing a mask, I suppose I would ask.
Mm-hmm. I guess putting on a mask, we do it for Halloween. We do it in a variety of ways. If we want to, perhaps rob a bank, we're well known for wearing masks in such situations, those people who do that. So masking us just what? It covers up a key part of how we communicate?
Sure. There are certainly effects that it has on being able to see our facial expressions. So we're not able to use a fundamental communication tool we have, which is facial expressions, when we're wearing a mask. And, I had been thinking of other kinds of masks building up to this interview. I was thinking only of medical masks, but
I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we use all sorts of masks. I just got done recording my daughter singing for a masked singer kind of get together we're doing with friends. So there are masks that hide our individuality, and that's their purpose.
Okay. Let me zero on something I'm sure you have been thinking about and we're more prepared for. As a social psychologist, what are you noticing? What do you find interesting about this sudden introduction of medical masks into our society?
Well, as a social psychologist, what I find most interesting is watching interactions between people and, of course, my own personal experiences. But, there are many people who are wearing masks and many who aren't, and it's creating these groups, you know, us versus them. And, I've observed different kind of aggressions between people and, as somebody who wears a mask, it's not clear what the intentions of other people are or what they're thinking. And so it's just introduced a lot of uncertainty in how we interact with other people. And so I've been observing that myself in grocery stores and out and about.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts in this breakdown of groups, the mask wearers, the versus the, if I put it that way, the non-mask wearers? Are they really sending signals? Can we be sure they're sending signals when they're wearing a mask or not wearing a mask?
Well, you can't be sure unless you ask them. And even in some cases, you could ask somebody and they might not know all their own motivations. But we can talk about why some people wear masks, and that would include the need to take action, to have solidarity with other people to fight this pandemic, just to have something that as an individual they can do if they're not a healthcare worker, for example, or doing research directly related to overcoming the pandemic. It might be their own fear of exposure or exposing loved ones. It could be they're more conscientious and they're just following the rules. It could be peer pressure, or we call them social norms. You know, you see other people doing it and you feel like you have to. It might be that your employer requires you to, Or it could be prior experience. So if you have lived in an area with prior infectious disease outbreaks, it's much more likely you're comfortable wearing a mask and it's just something you automatically turn to. It's more accepted. If you think about why people don't wear masks, and there are quite a few individuals in Iowa, for example, that don't wear masks, it might be because there's a lot of confusion about when, where, and why, and even how to wear masks. And so in uncertainty, people, they don't know what to do, and so they just, it's easier to not do it than to, mm-hmm. you know, try and do it. But it might be because they don't want to be told what to do, that they feel their freedom is being threatened. It might be that they don't want to send a message to others that they're afraid. And so some of the uncertainty around masks is it good for me to wear a mask? Does it protect me, or is it really just to protect other people? And, you know, the reality is it's for protecting other people, but people might not know that. And so they think, I don't need to wear a mask. I feel perfectly safe, and they don't want to give off this image to other people that they are afraid. So they don't wear a mask, and it's on purpose. And whether we can infer from their actions what they're thinking, we do anyways. So I'm sure other callers, and maybe even you, will have made these observations, but I'll give one example of my own. When
sure.
When I first started wearing a mask in the grocery store, and then this was at Hy-Vee, you know, they put in the one-way arrows in the aisles so that people should only go one direction to promote social distancing. Anyhow, I turned the wrong way and I started going the wrong way down this aisle, but I was wearing a mask and a woman came my way. I looked down, verified I'm going the wrong way, and I apologized to her. I said, I'm sorry, I'm going the wrong way, you know, and just very casually. And she looked at me and she said, I'm not at all worried. And she wasn't wearing a mask. To me, it was clear she was saying, I see your mask, I see the arrows, and I choose not to be afraid. I'm not worried, so don't even bother, lady. And I'm like, oh, okay. I still turned around and went the other way. But that's just an example. And you can tell that people know they're not wearing masks, and they're looking at people who are wearing masks and vice versa, trying to infer, even if they can't, they're trying to infer, like, oh, gosh, does this person, are they really afraid? Do they not understand? So we're all questioning each other, which is unfortunate, but also interesting for a social psychologist.
Right. Lisa, on my Facebook page, when I reached out to my Facebook friends, chimed in with this story. Not unlike yours, Lisa wrote, I live in a far western suburb of Chicago. Yesterday, I went to the grocery store. Everyone is required to wear a face covering in public places. So this is Illinois. In the store, everyone had face masks except one guy. He was younger man, dressed kind of like a hipster, writes Lisa. Truthfully, I immediately started judging him. He must think he's too cool for a mask. Clearly, he missed the huge sign at the store entrance. Where's the manager? This should be addressed now. I felt compelled to say something to him, but instead I kept my mouth shut. But you better believe I kept my eye on this guy and kept my distance with disinfectant wipe in hand, she writes. I don't personally like wearing my mask, but I also don't want to catch the virus or unknowingly give it to someone else, so I follow the rules. Wear my mask, carry my wipes, pray for the safety and the safety of others. In Illinois, it is commonplace now, so it's just part of the routine. I wonder how long it will last, writes Lisa on Facebook. Let's go to our callers. Maisie is joining us from Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Maisie.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for taking my call. I actually called in after hearing your last guest talking about their own observations. And I actually just had a very similar run-in just moments ago, leaving a routine doctor's appointment. And when I was leaving the lobby of this doctor's appointment, I, of course, was wearing my mask. As your last caller mentioned, it's not comfortable. I don't like doing it, but I do it for other people. You know, I do it knowing that other people are at much higher risk than myself. And I was keeping my distance, of course, from everyone else in the lobby, but was within earshot of an elderly woman who was not wearing a mask and was bragging rather loudly to a friend that she was with about the fact that she was not wearing a mask and how She was doing so intentionally and just thought that wearing a mask was ridiculous and uncomfortable, and you know, she shouldn't be forced to do that. And so just that juxtaposition of myself wearing that mask, you know, for really folks just like her, you know, and then her very boastfully talking about how she was
right,
not wearing her own mask. I thought that was an interesting run-in in a doctor's office nonetheless. So
Right. That is a strange setting for it.
That.
Maisie
yeah,
in Des Moines,
yeah,
thank you for letting us know that story. Maisie in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Allison Phillips, very similar to your story. So there must be a contingent of people who, what is the psychology, do you think? Break down that psychology a little bit more about what we're hearing there.
Well, as somebody who wears a mask and has looked at all of the medical research, I know that we should be wearing masks, and this is not a matter of opinion. And so there must be some level of uncertainty and unknown in why we should be wearing a mask. And what that story highlighted was this woman thought, if I wear a mask, I'm projecting that I'm not confident and I feel unsafe and that I'm sick. And that's really hard for people to do. I mean, I wear a mask and it's still weird for me to do, right? I can't smile at people. It's harder to talk to people. So I'm fully on board that this is what we need to do medically. It's one of the only things we can do with social distancing and disinfecting to protect ourselves until there's a vaccine. And so, and it will work. There's a really amazing set of research that shows, you know, depending on how effective a mask is, and it might be really pretty ineffective, like 60% effective at stopping droplets from leaving your mouth. If 80% of people are wearing that pretty ineffective mask, then the virus dies. It goes away. We end the pandemic. So it's just, we should be doing it. But why do people not do it? I understand. It's hard to do. It's hard for me to do. And I'm highly conscientious, and I know all this research. It's uncomfortable. It feels weird. It's kind of embarrassing to wear a mask, especially if others aren't doing it. So that's why I think the Facebook contribution about in Illinois, where it's required to wear a face mask and most people are, it becomes a lot easier for the rest of us. If everybody else is doing it, we don't feel so weird. If half the people are doing it, or the last time I was at Hy-Vee, it was like 30% of people are wearing a mask, then you feel weirder doing it, and it's even more uncomfortable. Right. So it would just be much more helpful if everyone was actually doing it as we should be medically, biologically speaking. But, you know, that's why it's uncomfortable. It could be embarrassing. People don't want to be told what to do. They don't want to appear being afraid. I think this might be interesting for you to think of it this way. It's also considered a public good, which means you're wearing a mask to protect other people. And the more people that do it, the better for everyone. But it's really hard to motivate every individual to do it because it's like this far away reward and everyone else has to do it. It's like donating to public radio, right? It's a public good. You don't have to do it. You can still get the benefit of public radio, but you do not individually have to give money. But it would be so much better for everyone if everyone gave money, you know. So it's a public good. The wearing a mask is similarly a public good, and it's really hard to motivate individuals to do so, especially if they're uncomfortable and there are these immediate negatives, like it's embarrassing, right. It's uncomfortable.
Right. Allison, I wanted to ask you about this. It would be different, though, wouldn't it? We would have the wearing and those who wear and those who don't, but we also, this is not a show that's focusing this hour on politics, but we do have a leader, a president and a vice president, who have not worn these masks, and the president's message is, it's a good thing to do. You should do that. I'm personally not going to do that. So that sort of cleaves us in a political way, doesn't it? And so we either identify with the president or we don't identify with the president.
Yes, the us versus them mentality is unfortunately breaking down along political lines because of the president and vice president's actions. I'll just turn it back to social psychology. It doesn't have to be political, but if you want people to engage in a behavior, you have to do it yourself. We call it modeling. You're sending a confusing message. If you don't, you're directly contradicting your own message. If you want people to do something, you show them that you are doing it, and that's very motivating. And so I think even though the president doesn't feel at risk at all because of his daily testing and making everyone else wear a mask, it would still be more effective at getting individuals in the community to wear a mask if he did so, just through modeling. So I think that that's a very important point that you make, and it doesn't have to be political. It's just modeling.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our callers quickly, 1-866-780-9100. We have a lot of input here from callers and social media. I'll ask our callers right from the outset to please be brief. We'll get right to the kernel of what you want to say. Bill is in Iowa City. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I want to talk about the educational differences. I live in Iowa City. There is much, much mask wearing. I work in rural Iowa, very few four-year degrees, and people are not wearing masks. And I think it's cultural. I think it's educational. And it's just the way it is. So that's my comment.
Okay, Bill in Iowa City, thanks for that observation. Maybe there'll be some study, huh, Allison, that we'll look at urban versus rural mask wearers at some point. Perhaps a study is underway as we speak. Let's go to Jerry in Van Horn. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to say that when I'm in the store and I look around at who's wearing masks and who isn't, I try not to judge, and I just use it as a moment when I can say, well, I think I see who the helpers would be should I need someone. And that was all I had to say.
Jerry in Van Horn, thank you very much. If you've just joined us, we're talking about how we've suddenly become masked as a society, at least some of us have, for health reasons. This hour, we're talking about the psychological and sociological dimensions and the weird feelings. Allison addressed that at the beginning. I certainly had it, and I'm assuming everybody did, right, Allison? That hesitancy, you look around, you can't help but most of us going into that grocery store for the first time, if we recall a few weeks ago, and you look around at how many people are wearing masks, right?
Yeah.
Determines how comfortable I will feel in my mask, right?
That's right. And of course, your next guests are going to talk about race. And so we have to acknowledge that there are some groups of people who are uncomfortable wearing a mask because it makes them afraid for their lives,
right,
for other reasons.
Let's talk with them now. Jasmine Brooks is with us, as well as Jordan Brooks. They're a couple. Jasmine is Equity and Inclusion Coordinator in the Office of Equal Opportunity at Iowa State University. Jordan, Director of Equity and Inclusion at ISU Design. Jordan and Jasmine, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. I want to ask, and I don't know who will answer this first of all. I think you're together in a house. You can see each other. So please answer accordingly. How does diversity in race factor into this question that we're talking about of wearing coronavirus masks?
Right. I think the first place where it comes up, one, is kind of some of the comments that were already made before, is that one, we all just need to be wearing the mask regardless of race, diversity, anything of that nature. Just when it comes to keeping our public safe, keeping ourselves safe, folks should be wearing it just to make sure, again, that we're taking the steps that we can. But when we think about how it starts to play out differently for different folks, I mean, we're seeing in the news in the past weeks and months, right, that there are Black men and women, Black trans men and women who are being killed not even wearing a mask because of the hypervigilance and surveillance that happens over Black and brown bodies. And then you add this layer of putting on a mask, a face is concealed. So now that hypervigilance within our American society turns up and folks are looking at you not as somebody who's trying to protect yourself from this health pandemic, right, but as this potential suspect, this person who might bring harm. So I think it goes back to how our society already just views Black and brown bodies even prior to this pandemic.
Right. And we've seen stories in the news. I just read one in the New York Times of how African-American men across the country worry that following these CDC recommendations to cover faces in public could expose them to harassment, even from the police. Jasmine, what is your observation there?
I would add that we're seeing an alternative narrative to communities of color. So what we're seeing is everyone's being told to wear a mask, but to communities of color, wear it to my own comfort. When thinking of like white comfort, social distance, but keep things available to me. When we're thinking of communities of color still being underserved when it comes to any type of relief or effort. It's, you know, get out the house to prevent cabin fever, but walk slow when you're outside, or don't come in my neighborhood. Again, it's what we miss with these things is that coronavirus is showing the disproportionate care and support for those that are marginalized, those who are already oppressed systemically. And so I feel like most of this conversation when it comes to masks is just the tip of the iceberg. It doesn't, I think it moves away from the actual conversation when it comes to essential workers, when it comes to folks, again, who are deeply impacted, and really thinking about like how are we displaying the actual narrative versus telling certain things that make it more comfortable to talk about. And so talking about African-American men wearing masks in their experience, well, we miss out on other stories, Black women and policing, or the Latinx community and policing. We moved away from talking about calling this a Chinese virus. Again, like the mask is easier compared to talking about what the actual conversation should be.
I see what you're saying. There's so many different facets of suddenly wearing masks in society. Those are all good points, Jasmine. You referenced it here too. According to the CDC, the effects of this COVID virus on the health of racial and ethnic minority groups is still emerging. But according to the CDC, the current data suggests a disproportionate burden of illness and death among racial and ethnic minority groups. Now, we've talked about that in the past on this program, the reasons why that is, but very interesting points. We're coming up on a break here in just a minute. Jordan, have you experienced anything like that? Quickly, before we say you and Jasmine wearing masks, do you wear masks?
Oh, yeah, I wear my mask when we go out in public. We've had people who shared them. We've made them ourselves and things. Because, again, at the end of the day, I want myself, my family, and the people I'm around to be healthy. But, again, does that fear, does that worry come up? Yeah.
Okay, stay with us. Jordan Brooks, Jasmine Brooks, also Allison Phillips. We'll take your calls, 1-866-780-9100, unmasking the psychology and sociology behind wearing masks. Back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, are potentially dangerous coronavirus conspiracy theories protected political speech? We'll talk about that and, of course, the latest political developments on our Politics Day with Megan Goldberg of Cornell College, Evan Renfro of the University of Northern Iowa, Politics Wednesday tomorrow on the program. Today, we're talking about our society's sudden mask wearing habit. Of course, it's a good habit to have, medically speaking, to protect others should you have the virus, to protect yourself. But there's a lot of other things wrapped up in wearing a mask, we're finding out as we explore the psychological and sociological aspects of mask wearing. Allison Phillips is with us, associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Also, Jasmine and Jordan Brooks, they are at Iowa State University, involved there in equity and inclusion there. Jordan, director of equity and inclusion at ISU Design. We're inviting you this hour to tell us your stories, your observations about mask wearing, and perhaps a story or two that has happened to you. Tim on my Facebook page was very succinct. He says, mask is namast. The spirit in me honors the spirit in you. It is the opposite of self-preservation. Let's go back to our phones. Kimberly is with us in Clive. Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for listening and joining our conversation.
Thank you so much. I went to the Hy-Vee the other day, and I always wear a mask. And like many of the others, I found many people there who didn't have a mask. I got in line behind a gentleman who was unloading his groceries, and I was disgruntled because I noticed he didn't have on a mask, and so, of course, I began to judge him. Then I went to a different layer of judgment because I started scrutinizing his groceries and realizing that he was making healthy choices, and so my judgment became righteous indignation, like, you should know better. You are obviously socially conscious. And he left ahead of me, and then I left. And a few days later, I was listening to the wonderful podcast, The Daily, that you play about the gentleman who was murdered in Georgia. And I started to cry. And all of a sudden, in that moment, it dawned on me, the gentleman I was judging was Black. He was African-American. And so in that moment, I reminded myself that I can choose to disagree with someone, but I cannot judge because I don't know their experience. I don't know really anything about them. And so it was kind of one of the gifts of the pandemic was to realize these things.
What a wonderful realization, Kimberly, and I'm sure Jasmine and Jordan have something to say about it, because as an African-American or a minority in the U.S., Jordan, Jasmine, it's more complicated when you think about putting that mask on in public, isn't it?
Absolutely. I know I have to think about, like, I am a privileged Black woman, and so when social distancing, you know, was put into place, I was able to, you know, be at home and do my work, keep my job, continue to support my family. And you know, the mask situation came a little bit later. And I had to think about, you know, I am a healthy individual, but like you had mentioned, like the greater good. So just because something isn't happening to me, I can impact another person. That was already something I had to think about. And so I think what people fail to realize and what the caller had mentioned is that there's this expectation on others, higher expectations on communities of color to adhere to certain standards, but not taking into account the experience, the lack of ability to do certain things that, you know, the government, the CDC is requiring. And the unfortunate reality is we're having to adhere to something that, you know, is being told to us in different ways. And so as far as wearing the mask is one thing, but wearing the mask appropriately is another. And so, again, the narrative is so different. As a Black person in Iowa, I felt that I didn't necessarily get, you know, adequate information. And thankfully, I'm able to do my research, but I can see that impacting a lot of folks in different ways, and putting that point of privilege on someone is bringing to light how we need to be more mindful of that.
Yeah, right. Jordan, let me ask you, when you put a mask on, or when African-Americans put a mask on, would you think they put more thought into the design of the mask, the color of the mask, for racial reasons?
I mean, I would think, yeah, that's the case, right? Like, I remember I saw in the news before they were demonstrating, put it on mask, and they had like blue and red handkerchiefs and things and stuff of that nature, right? Or just random cloths and things that folks would put on. And if that you're thinking about, all right, it's not only just me being safe, right, as from a health standpoint, but also I'm thinking about, honestly, white America. I'm thinking about folks who still have that colonial kind of mindset, that sense of ownership over people, that it's my job and to run or manage how other people move in the world. I'm thinking less about myself racially, right? Like, I guess, so when we talk about race, what I'm trying to say is it's not so much that I'm thinking about my Blackness. I'm thinking about how whiteness sees my Blackness. Right?
I see.
And I'm
see.
Thinking about
and
how
so,
the
and so,
culture sees my Blackness.
And so in choosing a type of facial covering and a color of facial covering, that would be a factor then, Jordan, right? You want something that is what? Less, what you would think would be perceived as less threatening? Is that what you're saying?
Right, yeah. But actually, that's not necessarily what I want, right? What I want is for other people to not see me as threatening, right?
Right.
So, yes,
right.
To get to what you're asking me, yes, do I try to wear a mask that has, you know, a nice, decent pattern or something like that on it, or it clearly looks medical? Yes, indeed, right? But the thing of what I want, right, is for the rest of the people within Iowa, within Ames, within our nation, right, to not see me because I'm wearing my mask that I'm trying to use to be protected as a threat, as dangerous, outright from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to our phones. So many phone callers. Again, I'll ask our callers to get right to the Colonel, be brief. Mary is with us in Iowa City. Welcome to the program, Mary.
Thank you. You know, if you're 30% of the dying and you're black, you got to take in mind what Hemingway said. If you're good, they get you. If they're bad, if you're bad, they get you. They're going to get you anyway. And take in, like, for African Americans, Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poem, "We Wear the Mask," is still applicable. And then, too, we got to start using our heads and getting rid of some of this fear. Dust off that old King James and read Revelation 13, Zechariah 2:8, Jonah 3, and Acts 9:18. We got to get with the program, and this is just how it is until we can get a vaccine to cure this situation. Thank you.
Mary, thank you. Bruce is in West Branch. Let's fly over to West Branch. Bruce, thanks for welcome. Thanks for listening. And what's your input here?
Thank you. I hate to turn the conversation away from, you know, this really important issue of people of color being affected so much greater by this whole thing. My point was a little bit different. I just wanted to address some of the, you know, the good old boys that I run into every day.
Sure, go ahead. This is not only about race. It's an important component of this discussion. But, yeah, go ahead, Bruce. What is the point you want to make?
Okay, I want to speak to the people that are choosing not to wear masks. I'm a retired nurse. My wife is a practicing nurse. We are both very used to wearing, you know, masks, gowns, gloves to protect others from ourselves. I'm also a rock climber for 40-some years, so I have done a lot of risk assessment. And I would like to say to these people that are choosing not to wear masks, that what I'm doing when I do is just I'm playing the odds. I'm increasing my odds of survival and those around me. I would ask them, do you wear a seatbelt when you drive? And if they said yes, I would say, there you go, you're increasing your odds of survival. And then I would ask them, do you drive drunk? And if they said no, I would say, there you are, you're increasing your odds and the odds of everyone around you. And so that's basically what a mask is doing is, you know, this whole thing, you know, this virus is everywhere.
Right.
There's a million ways to pick it up. But by wearing a mask, you're just increasing your odds and the odds of everyone around you,
right,
and your, you know, your people at home.
Right, Bruce, in West Branch, you're imagining that conversation, what you want to say to those not wearing a mask. Have you ever, in fact, done that? Have you ever said anything to someone not wearing a mask in the last few weeks?
No, and I never would unless someone asked me. You know, I would never try to tell someone else what to do. But if somebody, you know, asked me, why am I wearing a mask? Then I would be happy to, you know, try to give them my perspective.
Okay, Bruce in West Branch, thanks for calling in. 1-866-780-9100. Allison Phillips, we haven't heard from you for a few minutes. A lot of interesting anecdotes, conversations, stories here. Allison, what are you thinking at this point here in terms of the psychology of what we're experiencing in our culture?
Yeah, I think there are a couple good points that people have brought up that we haven't really highlighted. One is, even when people are aware that wearing a mask is going to help save people's lives, literally, that's not often what we're thinking about day in, day out. So an important part of behavior is automatic aspects or habits, for example. So I was going to say to your one caller, I think from Clive, she was judging the person in front of her, wasn't wearing a mask. It could have just been that this person forgot that day, you know, because yes, it's important to wear a mask. He may have been fully aware of that and usually wears a mask, but what, you know, it could be a simple forget. He should have just forgotten, maybe. And so we need to build wearing a mask into our daily routines. It has to be automatic. The more we do it, the more comfortable it will become, and we'll stop paying attention to, oh, man, that feels scratchy on my face. You just get used to it. It's like people who get used to wearing glasses, and then eventually they don't even notice the feeling of the glasses on their face anymore. So I think that we can do this, and we should keep in mind that people may have just forgotten, and I don't know if you've ever had that that embarrassment where you're like, oh man, I forgot my mask and it's really embarrassing, but you can't drive the half an hour back home or whatever it is to get it potentially.
Good point. And Tracy on Twitter echoes something that you said in terms of getting used to it. Tracy on Twitter writes, I believe that wearing masks could be mandated in public in the near future. I have my family practicing now, so there is less resistance later. So psychologically, you just get used to it, right? There are a lot of things that we do that we've gotten used to that aren't the most comfortable things in the world, right, Allison?
Absolutely. Psychologically and physically, you just get used to it, and then it becomes part of what you expect. And it might be, you know, we're not going to have to wear masks forever, but you know, if there is another pandemic down the line, it won't be so hard to pick it up again. So,
Jordan and Jasmine, I want to hear some more from you. There are other unexplored dimensions before our hour ends that have to do with race and inclusion.
I think the other space to look at, right, and Jasmine mentioned this earlier, is like our low-income folks or those people who are middle-class America, right, but you're just at that level where the job that you have is considered essential and you're out there constantly out with the public, right? That means that you're constantly putting yourself at risk, right? Like I think of my own family. I have a cousin who is a nurse, but then my aunt is back home who has an immunodeficiency disease, right? And so she's constantly very much thinking about how do I do my job, taking care of home, but then at the same time, being safe and taking care of my family. And I think there's so many people who, when we think about how socioeconomic status is a part of this as well, they're trying to do what they need to do to be able to survive and to take care of themselves, and their work is being considered essential within our country, right? But they're also putting their different family members and stuff potentially in harm's way. And so when we think of this, with these comments about I don't feel comfortable, the comments of it doesn't feel normal, it's not something that I want to do, right? Like you're then imposing that not just on the person who's actually at the counter or that nurse or the person who you're getting that service from, it's also their family as well too. And I think that also means that we're not entirely thinking about our connection to a community, right, to our entire nation. That's something for us to consider.
Very important, Jordan. Thank you. Let's go back to our phones. Calling from Grinnell, is it Craig or that I'm talking with?
Yeah, thank you
Craig,
for taking my call.
To the program.
I have a comment and a question. I guess looking at other nations like Taiwan, who went through the SARS epidemic in 2003, and you know, their government there, they actually would distribute masks to each citizen. So if you were an adult, 3 masks per week, a child, 5 masks per week, as well as requiring large stores or universities to take temperatures. And just thinking about a proactive response in the way that that's impacted, you know, for 7 days, they've had 0 cases. And as well as, I guess, sort of in relationship to that is the general ethos there. So in Taiwan, if you have a cold, you wear a mask because you don't want to infect other people. This sense of the society that we're all in this together. And so I think in this time, this moment of national self-reflection, of thinking about this balance that we always emphasize about personal liberty, but as your last guest was just saying, about common social good. How do we balance those? And I guess my question would be, in terms of the response in like Korea and Taiwan and how efficient and effective it was, why did the CDC take so long to suggest people in America wear masks and adopt this practice?
Right. Very good point, Craig, because in the beginning we were told, wear a mask, then don't wear a mask. They don't really do any good. But then that was all mixed up, I think. I don't know if our guests can recall anything else, but it was also mixed up in the fact that we had an incredible mask shortage. And so the motivations for telling us not to wear masks were our medical people need the masks right now. And the general public, there just isn't enough. Allison, do you know anything more about this?
No, I would agree with you. I think that there was a lot of miscommunication at the beginning, but there was also just uncertainty. I would point back to what the caller highlighted, though, is that in these other countries, they had prior experience that allowed them to just almost automatically be like, okay, this is what we're doing. We're wearing masks again. Everybody do it. And it was accepted and it was normal. It's something they'd done before. Here in the United States, you know, this was the first time. And so maybe, the CDC or other experts, they're looking at this specific virus and how it's transmitted, and they just didn't know. And so as the research came in, they're like, oh, well, it is actually particularly important for everyone to wear masks. But as you said, Ben, it was also at the time of the shortage of medical grade masks, and people were just buying them up, and there weren't enough for the healthcare workers. So I think it was a mixture of all of those things together. But that's speculation.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's go back to our phones. Ed is with us in Des Moines, coming to the end of our hour. Welcome to the program, Ed. I'll have to ask you to make it short, please. Welcome.
Okay, I will. First of all, I'm a mask wearer. I keep one in my car. Every time I get out, I put it on. You know, just want to protect me and my family. But the main thing is, you know, when you think about a mask, you know, the mind goes back to what you associate a mask with. And for a lot of us, you know, it could be going watching Western shows, who wore masks, the bad guys, watching movies, who's wearing a bandana over their face, you know, bad people, gang members, bank robbers. So, you know, you're automatically associating a mask to something bad. And, you know, that's pre-programmed into our minds.
Good point, Ed. How many shows have we seen Jasmine and Jordan, Allison, where that is, Allison, as he says, pre-programmed, right? People who don't want to be recognized are wearing masks. In this case, we're trying to protect our health and others' health, but a mask is protecting an identity, and you're doing something you shouldn't be doing in some cases, right, Allison?
Yeah, we need to change the norm and the perception of wearing a mask. It would help if more celebrities wore masks. There was a really humorous YouTube video of Gloria Estefan wearing a mask, and she's singing about you need to wear a mask. I thought it was hilarious, but that would really change people's automatic perception of mask wearing to be more positive. We need more of that.
Okay. Jasmine and Jordan, when you look to the future here in the last couple minutes we have of the program, you've highlighted so many important points for us to hear, especially those of us, we're living in a state of 90%+ white population here. Going forward, what do you see as improvements on the situation, especially for people who have a more complicated, perhaps a more complicated situation wearing a mask as an ethnic minority?
I would probably add that we meaning I would need to really think about our structure, institutional structure of how we're providing support and care, and it not being built on this idea of like I'm trying to be a good person. It's not about you. It's about how I am allowing other folks to be in spaces to help tell their stories. And so when this is over and whenever it's over, I think there needs to be more room made for folks to be able to tell their stories and explain how, you know, the structures, institutional structures, interpersonal experiences have impacted them, so that if this happens again, because pandemics come every so often, that we're not scrambling and having to, you know, decide based off really poor, loose data how some things are impacting others versus not. Like, I hate the idea that after this is over, you know, we're going to see a lot of articles that are going to come out that are going to show us after the fact who is impacted, who isn't, and it's just going to get shoved under the rug. And it's, you know, stories are going to get made about how the data was poor. Okay, well, let's collect better data then. Let's put more funding towards those things so that we don't have to worry about it later. And I think the last piece of what I'll say is just
quickly,
as the average citizen. Oh, go ahead.
No, very quickly. Go ahead, make your point.
Yeah, as the average citizen, we need to think about how am I measuring my level of comfort over someone's life.
Okay.
I think that's the ground break for that.
Okay, a nice thought to end with. Jasmine Brooks of Iowa State University, along with Jordan Brooks, thank you for joining us. And thank you, Allison Phillips, Associate Professor of Psychology, Director of the Healthy Habits Lab at Iowa State University. Thank you, Allison, for joining us as well.
Thank you so much.
River to River is produced by Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Rick Brown. Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, it's a Politics Wednesday edition of our program. We hope you'll join us. Megan Goldberg and Evan Renfro will be on board. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.